Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Good evening and welcome to Monsters Among Us. I'm your guide, Derek Hayes. Welcome back to another episode filled with creepy creatures and ghoulish ghosts. I have several great stories to share with you this evening, but before we get started, I wanted to thank a couple donators that arrived late to the party. After last week's episode, I received a few generous donations from the following folks: Neil A., Sarah G., and Veronica M. Thank you all. Your generosity is very much appreciated and will go a long way to ensure that the show continues for a long time to come. If you'd like to join these fine people in donating, simply head over to the website at monstersamonguspodcast.com and click on the donate button. Any amount is a huge help and every dollar helps. Alright, enough begging. Let's hear some spooky encounters. History is a funny thing. Have you ever found yourself in a location with history and actually imagined what it was like 50, 100, or even 200 years ago? Countless times I've done just that. I'll be sitting on a street-side patio enjoying lunch when the thought hits me. What history does this very spot hold? Were there events held here? Wars? Parades? Maybe even hangings? The truth is, history is an ever-changing force, and just like the erosion of wind and water, time has a way of smoothing out rough areas. This happens to be the situation with our first caller of the evening. What was once a hostile stretch of city is now a movie theater. This is Josh's call.
Hi, Derek. My name's Josh, and I'm calling you from Pittsburgh, PA. My story takes place at this place called The Waterfront. It's in Homestead, Pennsylvania. And just to give you a little background on what The Waterfront is, right now it's like an outdoor shopping area. I don't want to call it a shopping mall because everything's spread out, but there's a movie theater, restaurants, stores. Anything you could want, you can basically get down there. However, in 1892, it was the site of the Homestead Steelworks, which was owned by Andrew Carnegie. And in that year, there was a big dispute between Andrew Carnegie and the steelworkers. The steelworkers wanted to unionize. Carnegie wanted to fight it. And there was a big labor dispute, which happened to be one of the most violent in U.S. history. I believe they say about 10 to 12 people lost their lives and multiple more were injured. I could be wrong about the exact numbers, but nonetheless, it was a violent, bloody scene down there. So I used to work at the movie theater at the Waterfront. I worked in projection for about 4 years. I worked there for about eight. It was a good job to have when I was in college. They worked with my schedule, and I enjoyed my time there. When I was in projection, we had 22 screens in the theater. There were 11 on each side of the building, which were referenced high side and low side. Low side had screens 1 through 11, and high side had screens 12 through 22. Now, when you walked into either side of the projection booth, the first thing you would notice were two sets of staircases on either side of the room, which would lead to projectors 2 and 10 or 13 and 21, depending on which side you were on. And then you would see a desk followed by a long hallway where all the other projectors were. Usually I worked on low side because my boss liked high side. There was no camera for where our GM could see us. He could do what he pleased and all that, but that's whatever. One night I was working alone. I was closing and I was waiting for all the projectors to finish up, all the movies to end, so I could shut the projectors off and go home. So it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. All of the projectors were over except for number 13. Now, like I said, you would walk into booth and you would see two sets of staircases, one leading to 13, one to 21. So I had all of my personal belongings with me over there. You know, I had a bag where I'd carry my homework and other books in. So I was waiting on 13 to end the one night, and I decided I was going to sit on the steps and read my book. I was reading Game of Thrones. Not that that matters, but... so I was sitting there reading, and all of a sudden, I felt like I was being watched. You know that feeling of dread when you're being watched, but you can't tell where you're being watched from? That's how I felt. And then I had the feeling that I was being watched from 21, as if someone was leaning on the railing and watching me. So I looked up, and there was nothing there. So I thought, you know what, Josh, you're scaring yourself. Just go back to your book. Started reading my book, and a few minutes later, I got the same feeling, and I looked up, still nothing. So I went back to reading, and this time, I heard something whisper, "Josh." At this point, I jumped up and ran out of the projection booth. I was so scared. I've never been that scared in my life. There was nothing there. Nothing that could have been watching me, whispering, nothing. The radio that I had on had been silent for hours. And even if it were something on the radio, I would have heard it click on first. So it wasn't my radio. I know what people will say. They'll say, oh, the EMF given off by all the electronics in that area was just messing with you. You scared yourself. I don't buy that for a second, because I'd worked there for... I was probably in booth probably about 2 years at this point. And, you know, working late nights on low side, nothing ever happened. You know, I never felt this sense of dread, nothing. I could sit there and do homework, read a book, anything, and nothing would ever bother me. But anytime I would walk into high side, after this event, I just felt this sense of fear wash over me. Now, this movie theater was about 20 minutes from where all my friends and I lived, so they would come down frequently. And one night I brought them into booth after their movie was over, and they walked in, and they almost stopped dead. They said, you know, we can feel it. There's something here with you. And after they told me that, I told them my story about being watched and my name being whispered. And they were just totally creeped out, but they still wanted to walk up and down the hallway. So I took them down the hallway to where projector 15 sits. It's at the very end of the hall. And usually there's no real temperature fluctuations. At this point, we still had 35 millimeter film. So the humidity needs to be monitored closely so the film doesn't stick. Because if the film sticks, it causes problems. But it was very cold by number 15. And they just, you know, they could feel whatever was always there watching me. They could feel it at this point. They were very spiritual people. They would go to church every Sunday, you know. And they said a little, you know, whatever's here, please don't harm our friend. He means you no harm. He's just doing his job. I'd love to say from that point on, nothing ever happened. But another night, I was sitting there at the desk. And it was probably about 7:30 in the evening. So there's a lot of people there. There's a restaurant where the employees will come in and out of the booth. Nobody came in. You could hear the doors open when they would open, when someone would come through. Nobody came in. And I got up to turn around and start a projector. And the second I stood up, I heard this loud bang as if something had either slammed or kicked the desk I was sitting at. I turned around and there was nobody there. So I got on the radio. I called my boss and said, "Hey, were you just over here?" He said, "No, I've been on low side. I haven't gone anywhere." I don't know what it was that kicked or slammed something on that desk, but that creeped me out for the rest of the night, to the point where I had to have my boss switch sides with me. I never felt comfortable on high side after that. But I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the spirit of a steel worker letting me know it was there or what, but there was something in that building. And I'm glad I don't have to work in there anymore. But that's my story. Keep up the good work on the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh, and thank you for taking the time to research the history of your area. If you're interested, there is a link to the homestead strike Josh alluded to in his call in the show notes for today's episode. Josh's encounter is textbook ghostly activity. Loud bangs, feelings of being watched, disembodied voices, and strange temperature fluctuations. Any one of those strange happenings would be enough to rattle even the bravest of souls, let alone all in the same location. The voice in his ear made me think of something strange that happened in my grandmother's house years ago when she was still with us. Her and my grandfather went to Hawaii for 2 weeks and asked that I stay at their house while they were gone to keep an eye on things. Having raised 8 kids, the house was very large and had many guest rooms. So I picked one and went to sleep on that very first night. Midway through the night, I heard a voice quite close to me whisper my name. My blood ran cold. Was it a dream? Was it real? Was there someone or something in the house? Needless to say, I spent the remainder of my stay sleeping on the couch in the living room. Here's where it really gets creepy. I never told anyone about my experience. My grandma always joked about a ghost that lived in her house. She even had a name for him, Charlie. But despite this, I felt the need to keep my experience to myself. That is, until about 2 years later when my little brother did the same thing I did. He house sat for a few days while they were out of town, and he had the exact same experience. He too retreated to the living room couch for the remainder of his watch. So, point being, I completely understand why Josh reacted the way he did. It's very unsettling to hear a voice with no clear origin, but it's an entirely different situation when that mysterious voice utters your name. Thank you again, Josh, for sharing your encounter. Our next call isn't a story, per se. Unfortunately, due to a bad cell phone connection, I was only able to record a portion of this call, but I will play what came through.
I'm from Florida. I was just listening to the most recent episode and about the girl that saw that giant bird going driving in Nevada and lost time and ended up somewhere she wasn't supposed to be. And I have to say that's probably about the fifth time I've heard a story like that from that area of the country, from Nevada, Arizona, out in the west where there's those long deserted roads. And I from random sources, I wish I could, but I can't pinpoint it. Other podcasts and websites that deal with paranormal that I follow, but I've heard of several different people that have had, and a whole carloads of people having the same experience of missing time, cryptid creatures, And there's always more. It's not just they saw a cryptid creature, or they just had missing time, or they just ended up somewhere they weren't supposed to be. It's usually at least two of these things are wrapped up together. I remember one where some people had traveled. They had been driving for 2 hours or something, and when they got out of the car, they were to stop to go to the bathroom, whatever. They found out they were 8 hours down the road, and they had only been in the car for 2 hours. They could not figure out how that happened. And again, with the cryptids and people just losing time, also lights, people seeing lights, but it's always on the desert road that goes for miles and miles and miles, nothing around. I personally have never been out that far west, but I just wanted to let the girl that gave her story know that she's not alone. That's probably at least the fifth one that I've heard. And again, I wish I could pinpoint some sources, but it's like I know I've heard some on other podcasts and online, but I don't remember exactly where. But I have heard that story before, that apparently happens. I don't want to say a lot, but it happens.
Thank you, caller, for sharing your opinion. I really wish you were able to name a few of your sources. I'd like to check them out. My search only turned up one or possibly two of the strange happenings, never all three together. But at the very least, perhaps knowing that she's not alone may leave last week's caller, Carrie, feeling at least a little better. Thank you again for your input. I've been sitting on our next submission for quite a while now. It's short, but it's sweet. Late one night, about 2 years ago, my oldest daughter, who had turned 2 at the time, woke up and walked into our bedroom and climbed into my bed. As she settled into her pillow, she pointed to the corner of her bedroom and said, "Mama, who was that man? Who was that big, scary man?" I said, "What man?" as I looked into the dark, empty corner of my bedroom. My daughter then sat up and pointed to the same corner. That man, a scary, big man. Feeling creeped out, but still trying to soothe her and get her to sleep, I just said, "There's nobody there, darling. It might just be a shadow." At that, she settled and drifted back to sleep. I'm pretty sure I had a hard time going back to sleep that night myself. A few days later, we were in the kitchen. I was making lunch, and my daughter was at my feet playing with her toys. I saw her look up, and she calmly said, "The man is here, Mama." I replied to her, but more to what I believe was a spirit. "We have to tell the man he's not allowed to be here. He must find the light and leave our home." We were both quite quiet for a few seconds, then my little girl said to me, "Man is happy. He's in the sky like a kite." So I don't know. Is this a case of active imagination? Or was there a spirit only my young daughter could see? All I know is she had never said anything like this before and hasn't said anything like this since. Thank you. Creepy. Thank you so much for sharing your story. There's just something about children seeing things that we can't that is beyond unsettling. Perhaps it's their innocence or the fact that they are so adamant and genuine about the experience. Either way, I find it terrifying. Thank you again for sharing. Next up is another story about the hairy man of the woods. This is Chris's submission.
Hi, my name is Chris. I've got a story to share with you. This was relayed to me by a coworker about a possible Sasquatch encounter that he had. He was working as a camp counselor somewhere in, I believe, Idaho along the Snake River. And being a counselor, they stay at the camp most of the time, but when they had a break between kids, groups coming and going, they would all pile into the truck, drive the length of the Salmon River to the closest town, and go out for drinks or whatnot. What he told me was that when they were returning back to camp, and it was very late at night, and they were driving fairly carefully because it was a winding road, with the river to one side of them, and this being fairly deep forest, they turned a corner, and what he said was sitting on the side of the road was a large, hairy being. He said that what was interesting was that it had long reddish hair, and it was sitting in sort of a squat position with its hands up against its face. The impression that he got was that almost as if you saw someone who was in grief. It was just kind of balled up, knees up, and hands, and he said he saw definite hands covering its face with its head down. They were driving fast enough that they didn't stop immediately, but they backed the car up, and when they did, it was gone. They hadn't seen anything since then, but they certainly always kept their eyes out for it. But anyways, I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. This is strange. This is the second time this week I've heard reference to a Bigfoot or Sasquatch sitting in the middle of the road with his face in his hands. I cannot for the life of me recall which podcast I was listening to when I heard the other encounter, but I remember one of the hosts theorizing that it may be absorbing the road's residual heat, not unlike snakes do. At any rate, the theory made just as much sense as any, and could very easily explain the encounter that Chris just detailed. Thank you again, Chris. You know I love the Sasquatch submissions. And finally, our last call of the evening. I've been waiting for a very long time for another call like this to cross my path. The following is Matt's experience.
Hey, my name is Matt. I'm from Northern Virginia, but my story takes place in Amelia, Virginia. It's a little bit southwest of Richmond. It was back in either beginning of 2010 or end of 2009. I was living with a friend of mine at the time. We were playing Yu-Gi-Oh! In his room because it was, you know, late at night and we were, you know, dumb teenagers. It had snowed like crazy the day before and we're, you know, just like nothing to do outside. It's too bloody cold. So we're playing. I get up to stretch my legs. I open the blinds a bit because almost a full moon out there. And with the full moon, almost full moon, and with the snow, it made it so it was really easy to see everything that was going around. And near the end of his driveway, just walking there were three, I don't want to call them people, but just like three things moving really, really slowly. Like, I just see that, I'm like, hey, check this out real quick. And he gets up, takes a look at it with me, and we're just watching them move. They're moving so freaking weird, slowly. So we're watching them for a little bit, and then, like, I don't know, I feel like I zoned out while watching them. When I look away, I just look at my buddy, I'm like, hey, you want to keep playing? And he was like, yeah, but what about them? And then we look back out there, and there's nothing there. And then he checks his phone, and it was like 4 a.m. at that time. But when we looked, it was like close to like 11 something. Only thing I can think of is, well, after listening to a lot of your podcasts and you talking about the mirrored men, that's all I can think of is what they were. Yeah. I hope you like my story. Haven't seen anything like them since. I didn't see anything like them before. I didn't even know what they were until I heard that podcast. Thanks. I love the show. I've been listening since almost the beginning. Thanks. I hope you're able to use my story.
Thank you, Matt. My one complaint about your call is that I need more detail. What did they look like? How did they move? How far away were they? I would have loved to have heard more details about this account. For those that are new to the show and haven't listened to the past episodes, Mirrored Men is a handle I assigned to a phenomenon reported by several of my listeners over the past year. Each case details three figures, typically dressed in black or brown robes, that move in an identical fashion. Almost every case is also associated with some sort of missing time. It's a funny thing about these Mirrored Men stories. I cannot find them anywhere else. It seems that my show has a corner on that market. Now, many people would point to that and say that the stories are obviously fake. In the case of all but one story, I can only say that I do not believe they are, and I certainly am not aware of any fakery. The other story? Well, the very first Mirrored Men story was actually submitted by a very close friend of mine, so I know he's being truthful. It's a story he told me several times over the near 20 years of knowing him, and when I started this show, I knew he had to submit his story. Not in my wildest dreams did I expect others to come forward with similar accounts. So the point here is that although this seems to be the only source of information for the strange phenomenon, each call, to the best of my knowledge, is real and genuine. All that said, if you've experienced something similar, please reach out to me. Apparently, you're not alone. And that's going to do it for this episode. But before I go, a few pieces of info to digest. As you heard in the beginning of the episode, we are getting very close to the Cryptid Crate launch. For those that aren't familiar, Cryptid Crate is the first and only monthly subscription box that is completely cryptozoology themed. For years now, I've been searching for a box just like this with no luck, so I decided to create my own. After all, who wouldn't want a cryptid gift in the mail each and every month? So if this interests you at all, please head over to CryptidCrate.com and submit your email for updates and discounts on your first box. The official launch is only weeks away, so sign up today and lock in that discount. CryptidCrate.com. Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I'm always posting new videos, images, and nifty links to hold you over until the next episode. This one is huge. Please rate and review the show on iTunes. This info goes a long way to help the show grow, not only through recommendation, but also helps keep the show visible in iTunes, Stitcher, and the like. And finally, if you have a story to submit, please call the hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. That's 1-888-608-6444. Or, as always, you can visit the website for more submission options. Music from tonight's episode was provided by Mayu and Nature World 1986. Thank you all for listening, and until next week.